Hey, Blenders, on this week's show, the Oscar nominations are here, which means we have lots to discuss and a ton to fight about.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hello, Blenders, and welcome. Welcome to episode number 295 of Real Blend, a podcast that can't believe Madam Web swept the Oscars. Well-deserved, Madam Web. Good job. I'm really proud of you. On this week's show, the Oscar nominations are dropping, which means that we have a ton of stuff to talk about. Snubs, surprises, things that are making us really happy and things that are making us upset. My name is Sean O'Connell. I'm the managing editor at Cinema Blend and a co-host of the Real Blend podcast, joined, as always, by my very good friend Jake Hamilton of Fox 32, who looks a little different than the last time that we recorded. A little older, a little more distinguished.
That's Jake, true.
How are you?
Well, I'm not going to look younger than the last time we recorded.
No, that's a good point. Yeah, very true. Kevin somehow does look Benjamin Button-y.
He does.
He's throwing
Kevin
it
is
reverse.
The Benjamin Button of podcasts.
I have
Kevin McCarthy of Fox 5 in Washington, D.C.
Okay. Aging filter on my thing here, on my computer here. No, but it's awesome to be with you guys. And I'm assuming, Sean, you're going to set this up, but our backgrounds may look a little different than normal. But I'll let Sean set that up.
This is so random. I'm just going to jump in really quick. Just because you called out Benjamin Button, which one is a movie that I love, but one of my favorite office jokes ever, and Kevin, I'm curious if you ever got to this point, it's Michael sitting there, and for some reason he's exhausted. He was like, I'm more tired today than I was yesterday. And he pauses a beat and goes, I'm like Benjamin Button in reverse. I don't know why, but I think that is one of the most underappreciated office jokes ever.
That's a really good joke.
It's good.
Let's call out the fact. So if you're watching us on YouTube, you may have noticed that our backgrounds look completely different. And the boys are dressed up. And I've got a new Spider-Man t-shirt on. The reason for this is we
stayed the variation of like Kevin stayed the same. I changed, but still try to look classy. And Sean outdressed us all.
I did. Yeah. I put on a brand new Spider-Man t-shirt. The reason why we're looking different and in different backgrounds and in hotels, which may become the norm for us because junket travel seems to be picking back up and interviews seem to be happening a little bit more frequently. We are in London, the three of us, and we are covering the Argyle junket. Matthew Vaughn is going to be a guest on the show. Not today. He'll be on next week's show. So it is a hashtag it happened. And yes, Kevin.
Well, I was going to say the last time, if I'm correct on this, the last time we all recorded from this particular hotel that we are at in London was our Tom Hanks interview for A Man Called Otto. And it's funny because these backgrounds are very similar to where we were sitting when we were interviewing Tom Hanks. So just a shameless plug, if you haven't heard that interview, it's one of the funniest things we've been able to produce on this show. And it was all right here from London because we were all here for Avatar. So it's just kind of a cool full circle to be back. And then today we had another great podcast interview, which Sean
and
will talk
go
about.
Go find the Tom Hanks in the second. Well, both of them are terrific, but the second one is really, really fantastic. So that's why we have different backgrounds. We're here in London. We're going to talk about Argyle fully next week, and we're going to get into Matthew Vaughn, which is a terrific interview, which not only touches on the work that he did in Argyle, but gets into some great, great stories about X-Men and his thoughts on Henry Cavill and Bond. And Jake, I didn't even get a chance to tell you this, but when you pulled out that question, without going too deep, yeah, but where you rattled off all the people that he's worked with over the course of his career, that was phenomenal. Like, I'm really glad that you did that, because that set up a number of amazing stories that people are going to get to hear on the podcast.
Well, it's just funny, and here's a tease for what we're talking about, is I rattled off some of the greatest names in movie history, and the one he called out is not the one that I think I even said, really? That one?
That's a good tease. I'm gonna leave that one out there for the people. So if you're on YouTube, thank you very much for joining us. Hit subscribe, turn on your notifications, head to the comments down below. Let us know where you listen to Real Blend from, when you listen to Real Blend, and we'll have a call to action later on in the show. If you'd like to sign up for Real Blend Premium, head to the description. It'll tell you how you can sign up. Here are the things you get with Real Blend Premium. It's really great. You get an ad-free version of the show. And a newsletter from me every other week. And this week is a newsletter week, so I'll be writing something. Not about the Oscars. I think we're going to talk about everything we need to talk about with the Oscars in terms of this week's show. So you guys will get a full blast of that coming on Friday. I'll come up with something new and unique and fresh and different to talk about. So as I said, check the description for information on where you can sign up. Now, I get it. It's Friday, and you guys are going to be like, ugh, the Oscars already still. Like, you guys have... We've heard everything we need to hear, possibly, about the Oscar nominations, but you haven't heard Real Blend's take on it. And truth, we're recording it on the day that they got announced. So for us, it's fresh. And our feelings are very, very passionate about certain things. Like, I have to start with the big one. This show has been an unofficial cheerleader for Oppenheimer from the day that we saw it, probably for weeks even leading up to the time that we were able to see it. And then with the Oscar nominations coming out, Oppenheimer leads with 13 nominations, including several of the big ones: Best Picture, Best Director. Help me out, Kev. What else did it get? Screenplay.
Cinematography,
score.
Adapted screenplay, score, cinematography, production design, costume Killian. Design,
makeup,
actor, supporting actress for Emily Blunt.
Right. Downey.
Obviously, picture. Downey.
Yeah. Okay. So a ton. Let's get into the conversation that I think is top of mind, which is, with all these nominations, do we feel it's Nolan's year, that he's finally going to get the recognition that he deserves?
Yeah. I mean, obviously he's deserved this recognition for a long time. And he's been nominated before. Dunkirk, he was nominated for Best Director. Jake, you're usually good at this. What else has he been nominated for? Was it just Dunkirk?
Some screenplay nominations for producing, because a few of his films have been nominated for Best Picture. Like, I think Inception was nominated for Best Picture, so he would have gotten a nomination for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But up until now, Dunkirk was probably his biggest Oscar play.
Yeah, and obviously, and the company that he's in terms of this directing race, it was a hell of a year for cinema of 2023, and there was so many great filmmakers, and I do believe it's Nolan's year, and I think one of the things that's interesting about the Oscars and the narrative surrounding the Oscars is, like, we usually feel like people win when their time is due, they should have won for this role, but they ended up winning for this role, or Scorsese didn't win his Oscar until The Departed, but he probably should have won it for, Goodfellas and, anything,
Raging
Taxi
Bull.
Driver,
yeah,
Raging
sure.
Bull. I believe that this would be a win that is well-deserved outside of just the idea that it's Nolan's time. Because, I think I find that saying to be a little belittling when someone says, oh, it's their time, so they have to win, kind of thing. That to me discredits how great the film is that he may be winning for. And he arguably made his masterpiece with Oppenheimer. I mean, I still love Interstellar as my favorite personally, but he's winning. We'd be winning for the film that he deserves to win for. It's not just like, hey, Nolan hasn't won an Oscar for Best Directing or Best Picture before, so let's just give it to him for this one.
I don't think that's the narrative on him this year. Like, I've heard that narrative applied to, like, Paul Giamatti. And again, with Giamatti, it fits and it doesn't fit. Like, yes, you could make the argument that he has deserved an Oscar prior to this point. this is also an Oscar worthy performance, you know?
Yes.
So you can play the it's his time, but he's also getting it for a film where I think he absolutely deserves it. I don't hear that narrative yet on Nolan. And the unfortunate thing now is that there's too much time between the nominations and the telecast for all of these sometimes false narratives to start to, it's like, can you weather the storm between when you received the nomination and when the actual telecast happens? So
I find frustrating is the exact word I would use for it, because that's the problem, is like the nominations are out. And Jake, I don't know if you know the voting timeline or when the voting actually takes place for that. But I find it interesting because you're right. It's like people could get tired of the movie that's the front runner between now and whatever was it, the early March when the Oscars are.
Just ask
and
Power of the Dog.
It's like you never want to be the front runner. When is the good time to be the front runner?
But I will say this, to Universal Pictures and Oppenheimer, they have done a good job of kind of weathering that storm of the frontrunner aspect, because when the film dropped in July, I think a lot of people started talking about the idea that it would be a frontrunner at that point. And I think one of the things that we all discussed was, you know, well, there's almost a year until the Oscars, essentially. I mean, July to March, not exactly a year, but, you know, long enough. They've done a good job of kind of keeping that film, I feel, in a good balance where it doesn't feel too front runnery, that's even a word, but it also, we also know deep down that it is the front runner.
That
but
changed today though. 13 nominations tells everyone.
Yeah, I don't, but
you're the front runner.
I think the issue though is that when that happens, when the front runner becomes the problem in terms of like a movie is such a front runner that people are just tired of hearing and talking about it, I feel like that would have happened with Oppenheimer months ago, because that movie was talked about all the time from July on our show, everywhere.
I get that, and I don't disagree, but I don't think you can make the argument that it's not the front runner anymore, or it doesn't have the image of the front runner.
No, it is.
I think it is far away. Let me ask you guys this. I'm really curious. 13 nominations, one shy of the Oscar record, which is 14. Had Nolan, and I don't know if Nolan's the person to blame for this, but had Nolan not pushed the narrative of there's no special effects in this movie, what we did was practical, da 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 da, and arguably, potentially, rumor has it, pissed off the visual effects branch of the Academy, would we then be looking at Oppenheimer with 14 nominations?
I think it's a great question, and I... In my personal opinion, so we got to clear that up just a little bit real fast. So when that quote came out from Nolan about no CGI in Oppenheimer, that is obvious. He obviously was speaking about the idea of filming visual effects in camera. CGI is still considered some of the things they did in the film, which is removing wires or fixing time period things or whatever they were doing. All that being done in post, that's still considered, right, Gabe? It's still considered CGI. So regardless of the quote, I feel what Nolan said and what he meant got misconstrued, in my personal opinion. People thought that he actually meant that there was no CGI in the film. And all it meant was that there was no CGI used to make the visuals that you're seeing. You know, I guess that might even be inaccurate, because you have to still deal with all the visual effects that you deal with in post, marrying them together with a computer. So it technically is CGI. It just to Jake's point,
I think it's unfair to narrow it down to that one quote. I think this is a long Not that Christopher Nolan doesn't appreciate visual effects artists. And I think if you were having a one-on-one conversation with him about visual effects, I think he'd have a very enlightened opinion about how to use them or whatever. And he'd have his own opinion. But this has been a long... You talk about Interstellar. Like, even then, they were like, oh, yeah, we didn't use anything. Like, I think it's more of a long-standing thing with Nolan. Not that he... Again, this is not about what he's saying is controversial. But if the idea is that a certain segment of the Academy is rubbed the wrong way about it, I don't think you can reduce it down to one quote, though. I think it's just
It's not that Oppenheimer didn't get nominated today. It didn't make the short list. Like, right, we went in today with it not even being in contention to be nominated for special effects.
And it makes no sense, because I think the big problem that this is a very interesting point. People assume that visual effects generally means computer graphics, means like, means it, like doing something in the movie that, like Optimus Prime, that is CGI, right? And I, and it's a computer generated effect to create a character.
Sure, yeah.
And I think that people forget that visual effects is also practical.
Well, and what's the official title of the category?
Best visual effects.
Which, so, to be honest, the visual effects, they always pick like the most visual effects.
The Academy maybe needs some clarification there. But to clarify the technicality, visual effects is computer generated imagery. Special effects is on set, in camera, whether you're creating a mirror, you know, a trick or not, that is special effects. Visual effects mm-hmm. is using a computer to alter the image, whether that's generate, composite, or whatever, that's technically visual effects. So if the Academy itself is a stickler on visual effects being visual effects and special effects being special effects,
then
I mean, if Nolan's championing his movie for its special effects, then it's a great special effects film. And I can't begrudge, you know, that particular group of artists for going, why would we try to recognize this if it's not trying to hold up this department anyway, when there's all this other great work that's being done? Like, I don't necessarily know that that's maybe as controversial as it sounds.
But also, I'm sorry, but Nolan's not going to cry over 14 nominations.
Sure. Yeah.
I think he's fine. Because I, in general, here's what I was about to push back on, Jake. I was going to say, in general, I'm not sure people remember like what set a record for nominations. But when you said 14, like I remember Titanic and I remember, what's the one before? Ben-Hur? I think Ben-Hur was the one who...
I think All About Eve back in 1950. I think Fellowship may have gotten
14. La La Land.
I looked. Yeah, La La Land. La La Land got 14.
Oh, did it really? Wow, yeah. Interesting.
And,
okay.
And last thing I do want to say about the effects, just real quick, in Oppenheimer, it's like do yourself a favor if you haven't had a chance, like check out the special features on the DVD or the iTunes, however you prefer to watch it. Just to get a view into kind of how they built the special effects in the film and the fact that everything was done in camera and all those crazy things that are happening within Oppenheimer's mind. Like I that film missing visual effects is kind of insane. Like I just
Did
think
the
it's
killer
insane.
Get it? You guys know no. if the killer ended up getting visual effects? No.
No.
Because I don't think
the killer made the shortlist.
It didn't make the shortlist either. All right. So Jake.
Yep.
Best director category, Justine Triet, Anatomy of a Fall, Martin Scorsese, Killers of the Flower Moon, Yorgos Lanthimos, Poor Things, Christopher Nolan, Oppenheimer, and Jonathan Glazer, The Zone of Interest. Does anyone beat Nolan?
No one beats Nolan.
You think that's locked?
Yeah, I think that's locked. Can I use the best director category to ask you guys a big question and reveal a hot take of my own?
Sure.
I think if you're only going to have 5 best director nominees, we should just go back to 5 best picture nominees.
Yeah, I mean,
because I feel like
logical.
I feel like more often than not, the director category is basically saying which of the best picture nominees have a shot, and which of them were just added based on that tradition of when Dark Knight didn't get nominated, the next year they expanded it. I just don't. Other
Argo.
Than being able to. Yeah, but like I feel, granted, it's not always 5 and 5. It's not always 5. It's not always, you know, even when there were 5 Best Picture nominees, it didn't always line up perfectly. But it does basically tell you here are the ballpark of the Best Picture nominees to take that we're taking more seriously.
They should choice it, baby, and just give 11 of every category.
Fucking nominate everybody.
Were you released in the year 2023? Welcome.
But yeah, basically, it just sort of feels, I don't know, like. Like, don't you feel that, like even though there are 10 movies nominated for Best Picture, some Best Picture nominations feel just a little bit better than the others. Like,
no, I agree with that.
Like, Maestro, a Maestro Best Picture nomination is not the same as a Killers of the Flower Moon nomination. It's not.
Well, and I saw that one of the trades, I believe, is Hollywood Reporter, and now I'm going to miss the number, but I believe it's 3,000. I believe that there are 3,000... international members, voting members now of the Academy, which they credit to the increased interest in pictures like Anatomy of a Fall and Zone of Interest. And I think in specified categories like Best Director, that influence is starting to rear its head. But you're still going to get the American Fictions, and the Barbies. Like, if you went with your five, Jake, you're saying that the Holdovers wouldn't have a Best Picture nomination simply because Alexander Payne didn't.
Again, it doesn't always go five for five, but let's be honest. What if it didn't? A lot of great movies didn't make that top five. They just didn't. It just was what it was. In the same way that, like, you know, what if this were a year where Barbie wasn't nominated for Best Picture if it didn't make the top five? Like, I don't know.
They,
like,
generally, didn't they expand the field in a way to make more audience members interested in the show?
Yeah, because it was the year after The Dark Knight famously didn't get nominated for Best Picture and people lost their mind. And so, that movie came out in 2008, so that would have been 2009 Oscars. So I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, that it was the 2010 Oscars that first said it could be somewhere between 5 and 10. And then at a certain point, then they just said, okay, it's just going to be 10. But it just starts to feel like you're trying, again, and one of my biggest complaints about the Oscars is that you're trying to get people that don't care about the Oscars to watch the Oscars.
Well, if that's the case, then why wasn't Across the Spider-Verse nominated in the 1 of 10?
Oh, that's a much bigger question. But it was never, never really felt like it was a real contender at all this award season. It didn't feel like across the, like, it's not like it was being nominated by everyone and then the Oscars didn't nominate it. It wasn't striking with anybody.
But to your point of, like, if this is why it is, like, putting two and two together of this is why it's this wide and this is what's happening, like, those movies I don't know are necessarily being recognized in that way, though. Like, movie is what, Barbie?
Yeah, okay, yes, but in the years past, like, you could make the argument that, like, Black Panther was nominated and probably wouldn't have been nominated in the top five.
Maybe. I forget what the field was that year.
I think back in the day, Best Picture nomination had a lot more weight to it.
Yes, I would agree.
There are still people who go out of their way to see the nominations, you know, once they are revealed. And but I don't know what kind of weight.
Yeah, and again, I'm not trying to, like, the thing, my defense of the Oscars as a whole is that it encourages people to seek out and watch movies that maybe otherwise they never did. And if they're doing so with 10 movies instead of 5, that's great. But it just feels like to your point, that the value of a Best Picture nomination isn't what it used to be. Like, I'm much more impressed with a movie that got nominated for Best Picture in 1992 than I am a movie that got nominated in 2024.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
And if that means that really great movies are left off the list, that means that really great movies are left off. I just feel like we should go back.
Can I point out, I was curious, you mentioned the Black Panther. Do you think it would have still made a top five? The winner was Green Book.
No. Oh.
But I want to give you the ones that were there. You have Vice, A Star Is Born, Roma, The Favorite, Bohemian Rhapsody, Black Klansman, Black Panther, Green Book.
I don't think
it makes it. And granted,
I'm not saying
it doesn't deserve it.
You think? Okay, say that again. Say those again.
Roma top five?
Yeah, Roma's top five.
The Favorite?
Yes. Yeah, probably Favorite.
A Star Is Born?
Yeah. Yes.
Vice?
No. I say no.
No.
Okay. Bohemian Rhapsody?
No. I say yes.
You say not would it, but I'm just saying, like, do you think it should be over this?
Oh, should or would?
Would it? Okay, that's
interesting.
Yes,
I think because it won so much other stuff. It's hard to say that it wouldn't have been nominated.
Okay,
so we
have Roma, The Favorite, A Star Is Born, and Bohemian Rhapsody.
And then you have
left is Black Klansman, Black Panther, and the winner, Green Book.
Yeah, I think you include Green Book, and Black Klansman doesn't make it, and Black Panther doesn't make it. Okay. Not saying that's what should have happened.
Okay.
But what do you take out of the five?
It would make the top five for me as far as what should happen, I think.
Oh, well, yes. Yeah. Well, should and would, as we've learned with the Oscars, should and would are two completely different things. I think if you had to do the old...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think if you do the old school five, that year is Roma, The Favorite, A Star Is Born, Bohemian Rhapsody, and Green Book.
I would love transparency. I would like to see numerical results. I would like to see transparency.
Oscars are a feeling, man.
You're never gonna get that. You want the producer of a movie to find out that they were the least favorite of the Best Picture nominees?
Yeah.
Why not? If you are, you are. I mean, yes, I would like to see a little transparency.
I mean, you are choosing a winner.
Yeah.
And you're basically saying when you choose a winner that the other nominations were lesser than in some capacity.
I think that's not a way we should try to think about these things.
No, believe me, none of this art should be judged this way.
Exactly. Like, I don't think it should this be seen as a format. Competition. I think it's more of a...
But it is!
Well, it, I think it's more... It, I think it is if we make it. I think that you could also argue that this is a temperature check of where this industry is at the time. Not which one of these
award is best picture.
Sure, and I'm saying
which means that the other films are not the best, according to the Academy.
And I think that it's a little more nuanced than that, necessarily.
And I always think of it in the same way that, I don't know, when you talk about baseball playoffs, it very rarely is the team that wins the World Series is the team that won the most games in a regular season.
Sure.
It's just, baseball is all about team who got hot at the right time. Yeah, in the same way that, like, had the Oscars been 6 weeks before 2 years ago, we'd be talking about Best Picture winner Power of the Dog. But instead, it's Best Picture winner Coda. Like, It's always just a matter of, you know, who's hot at the moment that the Oscar voters are voting.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, listen, I don't want to romanticize this idea, but Jake brought up an interesting point about the 90s and like there was such a weight to an Oscar winner.
Yes. Mm-hmm. A best picture.
For a long time, it was such a big deal when a film won best picture. I'm not saying it's not now. But it does feel like it's dimmed in a way.
I think
social media plays into that. I think we're too connected to the process now. I think there was a mystery that we had as kids. You know what I liken it to? It's like when you used to go to the movies and find out a movie was coming out based on the trailer you were watching in that theater. Like, I didn't know Lost World was even being made until I saw a trailer in a movie that I went to see. And I think it's a double-edged sword. Listen, this podcast is done on a movie website that gets millions and millions of page views, and people are hungry for this type of content.
Sure.
But I do believe that there is a check that we need to make within ourselves that not that we're diminishing or belittling the concept of the Oscars. And I'm not saying websites in general. I'm just talking about in general as a society. I think we're almost too connected to the process now. And I think once the Oscars hit, and I know it's our jobs, once the Oscars hit, it doesn't feel like it did. It doesn't have the weight it did when, like, you know, when Shakespeare in Love beat Saving Private Ryan at the Oscars, I was emotional. I was so, like, I couldn't believe it. And I don't know that I feel that way about the Oscars.
Well, let me push back slightly.
Like I did.
Let me push back slightly on that. We've been doing this a long time.
Yeah.
There are YouTube channels out there right now with people who are as hungry as we were.
Yeah.
They really care. We've just been doing it too long.
That's the reality of it. I want to clarify. It's not that we don't care. I think there's an element of almost too much access.
I wonder, but that's that's kind of the point I was getting at, though. There was a fair point that you're making, but that was my point of we shouldn't look at it as a competition. Like, us on this side of it, we have no control of the vote. We have no control of which movies are made. So looking at it for us on this side of it, getting 10 instead of 5, if we restructure the way we're looking at Oscar, sure, it's not this weird prestigious thing that's a bit pretentious. I think that's also just a natural evolution of this type of award ceremony, of any sort of audience being like, oh, okay, when they give you, you know, a Shakespeare in Love versus a Saving Private Ryan, it sort of loses its own luster on its own. But I think us as the audience can look at this and go, great, there are 10 movies that we're celebrating. Let's talk about why those 10 movies are great and why they deserve to be here. Whether they're the first one on our list or the last one, that doesn't really matter. It's not a competition for first, second, or third. And to Jake's point, the winner is just whoever was a top of mind at the end of February, you know, and that's okay. Like that's a wonderful thing we can celebrate, but keeping that list in mind as, again, not a competition of this one versus that one, but of a, here is what this year looked like and why we should look back and celebrate it as we get into this next one. I think we have control over that is my point.
Well, we have two different segments on this show. One where we go back and look at Oscar winners and scoff at what won and what didn't. Right. But another where we go back and look at our own top 10 lists and go, ooh, really? We put that one? So like, we're just as guilty as the Academy of just liking a movie when we like it at the moment, the way that we like it. And it's to no one's fault.
Which is exactly why I say we shouldn't talk about it like it's a competition. I get that there's voting and there are numbers involved, but because we know that it's not going to stand the test of time, because we know we are going to change and the movie's not going to change.
Sure.
we should just look at it for what it is, which is a temperature check in the moment.
Trademarking that statement.
I think Scorsese or someone said that first, but I love that we title
took it from me.
Sure.
I still do think the weight of what an Oscar means has changed, to Jake's point. Like, I think from a history perspective, let's say a new movie fan is, you know, born into the world and 13, 14 years later, they go online and they want to look up a list of all the past Oscar winners and watch all the best picture winners over the history of time. And that win, regardless of what time frame we're in, is a historical, prestigious moment in cinema for whatever film ends up winning that year. And I think the point I was trying to make about our access, and this goes along with like just movie watching in general and the behind the scenes stories that we cover and look at and read, and then we go see a movie and we expect it to be a certain way, et cetera. I mean, the nature of our business is I'm basically being a hypocrite here because I do this for a living. And so yeah. I want the Oscars to feel like they did when I was growing up. I want them to feel important again. I want them
Andy
to
wants
feel
to play with his toys, man.
Yeah. And I still get butterflies. Like Jake and I, so we're in London. Jake and I and Sean, we just finished interviewing 8 insanely famous actors and actresses and filmmakers. And Jake and I were in this little side room after we were done with our interviews, watching the Oscar nominations together. And Jake looked at me and he's like, dude, this is so cool. Like, we get to do this. And he's 100% right.
We're going to take a quick break, come back on the other side. We're going to talk a few of the major snubs that happened. A couple of milestones for some talent that we truly appreciate, and dig a little deeper into the Oscar nominations on the other side of this break.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And we are back. All right. So this is a topic that I would really like to get to because I don't quite understand it. Barbie gets a Best Picture nomination. This has been the year of Barbie and Oppenheimer. They were the two driving forces of so much of the film industry. Those two films, when they came out in the summertime, rejuvenated the box office. I'm not saying that they saved cinemas, but it was great to have a cultural moment happen where, you know, mass audiences were coming together to support both of these films. Barbie, I think, absolutely deserves to get into Best Picture. I was legitimately shocked, not Greta, because I'd been hearing enough stuff from people saying, like, is Greta actually going to get in? The director category is competitive. I'm stunned Margot didn't get in. And not only am I stunned that Margot didn't get in, I can't believe, and again, I don't think that the Academy can look at this from their big picture, but to give a nomination to Ryan Gosling and to not give one to Margot and Greta is a really bad look. I think that's a bad look. And I'm not quite sure
America Ferrera did get a nom as well, though.
I understand that as well, too. And I also understand that Margot and Greta are getting nominations by being producers of the film that's sure. in Best Picture.
Yeah.
But I just think that I'm shocked. I don't know how else to say it, but I'm stunned that Margot did not make it into Best Actress.
I was telling Jake this earlier, and I started feeling this rumbling about Margot in my gut, not getting into the actress race when the film first came out. And I'll tell you why, because so much of the conversation surrounding that film was about Ryan Gosling as Ken and America's speech, rightfully so. Mm-hmm. I was very happy that America got nominated. That was a really, really cool nomination. And I think her speech at the Critics' Choice when she accepted the See Her Award, I think a lot of that factors in. Like, that speech was beautiful. Her monologue in the film was beautiful. Back to Margot. I think Margot is so good that we take her for granted. It's kind of like the Matt Damon effect that Jake and I talk about sometimes, where like someone, right, Jake, you know what I'm talking about, like, we're like, mm-hmm. you put Matt Damon in a film, you expect him to be great, and he's just great. Like, he crushes it in Air, but we're not talking about him as an Oscar nominee here, even though I would argue that he or Viola Davis deserved an award, a nomination from that film.
You could have gotten it.
I think the point I'm making is that Margot is Barbie, and we almost take it for granted how she keeps that film together. She is so great in that film that it's almost an afterthought, because you just already assume she's amazing. And I think what Margot does so well in Barbie that I don't think we're talking about enough is it's the allowing of the whole ensemble to be at their best. And she's part of that picture, right? And I think because Ryan's stuff is so showy, I would argue, not that Margot's isn't, I think that became more of the conversation. The America monologue became more of the conversation. Greta not getting a director nomination.
That's a
It's a shame. And I think this is, but I felt this when the film first came out and the conversation around it. Like, people weren't really talking about how great Margot was in the movie. And I found that to be weird. And like, Jake made a point on his show today about like, Barbie didn't get nominated for the Barbie movie. And I guess the argument to that could be like Top Gun Maverick. Cruise didn't get an actor nomination. That's his title character as well.
But the fighter jet did.
Right. But the film did, and the director didn't. So I guess I'm not comparing Barbie and Top Gun and Maverick at all thematically.
I know what you mean, though.
But I'm comparing.
You know what? Both, maybe the Academy views Barbie as more of just a Top Gun, like a blockbuster.
I think the reason
about Barbie, though, is it's both. Like, it does so much.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Barbie does so much thematically. And so did Top Gun. Top Gun had some really good thematics as well. But I do think if you look at both those movies, you can consider both of them to be saving of cinema in terms of like the billions of dollars of box office they produced. And I think it's fascinating. But I to Gabe's point, Barbie is such a deeper film than a blockbuster movie. I mean, you're opening with a 2001 homage. And then you're dealing with thematics that have been around for years, and people are talking about them more and more now. I think Barbie is, in my opinion, a better film than Top Gun Maverick. But I think the reason I'm using that as a comparison is because of the box office and how successful it was. But the Greta nomination, not the non-nomination for Greta, is to me even worse than the Margot not getting a nomination, because I think that, again, to the point of the blockbuster storytelling, Greta's movie is considered in that blockbuster territory, but that is an artfully made film. Like, I don't think people realize the behind the scenes of how they shot those transitions between Barbie world and the real world.
Oh, that is her vision.
It's an old school filmmaking movie with a voice of a generation in terms of a director that we're seeing. And that's why I think she deserves a nomination. I really do. That one was crazy to me that she wasn't nominated.
Jake, do you assume that Margot was number six on the list?
Here's kind of what surprises me, is that like, I feel like in the best actress category, you can tell who knocked her out. And I think the person who knocked her out is a little like, you knew Carey Mulligan was going to get in, you knew Sandra Hüller was going to get in, you knew Lily Gladstone was going to get in, you knew Emma Stone was going to get in. Mm-hmm. I always thought Margot Robbie was in that fifth category. And if you had said Margot Robbie didn't get in because Greta Lee did, I would pause and mm-hmm. go, you know what? Sucks, but okay, I get it.
Makes sense.
We've talked a lot about how stacked Best Actress is this year. But mm-hmm. the fact that Margot Robbie didn't get in because Annette Bening did for Naiad. And look, I liked Naiad. I texted Sean after. I was like, dude, I actually really like that movie. Mm-hmm. Does Annette Bening deserve to be in over Margot Robbie? No. No, like, it's not even to me, like, Annette Bening would be much further down the list. The fact that she somehow snuck in and took that fifth spot from both Greta Lee and Margot Robbie, I think it's kind of ridiculous. And you can't always tell. You can't always tell who's that person that got in over someone else. But
yeah,
I mean, I think I feel like in this case you can.
I do want to just pause for a second because Jake brings up Greta Lee because we didn't touch on it in the picture category. Just shout out to Celine Song, like for a first time filmmaker. Nominee. Screenplay and best picture nomination.
Past Lives got the same number of nominations as Naiad, and that shouldn't be the case.
But dude, I mean, like that's like some of the biggest films. But the last thing I want to say about Past Lives is it's a movie that Past Lives being nominated for best director, or I'm sorry, for best picture and screenplay, I find is a miracle. And I'll tell you why. It's two reasons. One, first time feature filmmaker crushed it out the park. Just genius film. We had her on the show. Check it out. Great conversation.
She's great. Oh my God, she's great.
The other part of this is this. That's a film that could have easily been buried. Like, you're talking about a year with some of the strongest filmmaking.
The last 8 weeks have been nothing but people going nuts about Past Lives. So how did it only get two?
That's the point I'm making. So, like, the movie came out in early June. I did the junket in on May 31st. A24 has, you know, we talked about this earlier on the show, and this is an interesting point we can go into at some point on our show as well, is how these studios position which one's going to be their Oscar film. Like Netflix, you know, they knew it's going to be Maestro, Naiad, and, you know, you go into a campaign. A24 generally has a bunch of Oscar films. I mean, they won Everything Everywhere All at Once. They are completely aware of their campaigning, and they had a bunch of great films that came out in 2023. For Past Lives to be like a smaller film in one of their major, you know, campaigns and to survive from June until now, and a film that didn't really make a lot of money at the box office. I don't think
it's
made
good.
More than, oh, no, no. It's
really
amazing.
Good.
No, you're missing the point I'm making.
Sustained. Because I would equate it to like a Whiplash or something like that. That's just 100% first movie, essentially.
I think Past Lives, I'm just so happy for it because it's my number two of 2023. I've been in love with that film since May, and I've been talking about it since May, and I just didn't think, I was worried it wasn't going to survive the 6 or 7 months leading into this because of the Oppenheimers, because of the Barbies and the Zone of Interest, and there's so many other films that are being talked about. Isn't Zone of Interest A24?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Think about that. A24 has two Best Picture nominations. Does any other studio have that many?
And they won last year.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, A24 has their campaigning down. Like, for Past Lives to survive is
Bradley
amazing.
Going to work with them next.
Zone of Interest just came out. So
just to get it.
No, I know. But I just, you got to give A24 credit for their campaigning.
Yeah.
Like, good for them for supporting their filmmakers.
Well, I mean, Leo should have hired them.
Yeah.
Because Leo did not get in.
Does
for
he care
actor.
Anymore, do you think?
No, he doesn't.
I
disagree. I think he cares.
I think he cares. But you know what? I'm going to go on the record. Hot take. He doesn't deserve it for this picture.
Disagree.
He's done way, way better films. And we'll go to the actor category.
No, but
you
can't do that.
Out?
That's not fair. You can't.
I know.
He's not up against himself.
No, but I'm saying this is not one of his best performances. I would not have.
But do you think that all five of the nominees give better performances than he does for best actor?
I do.
Okay.
That's
a much more valid argument than.
So, best actor, we have Paul Giamatti for The Holdovers, Bradley Cooper for Maestro, Colman Domingo for Rustin, Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer, and Jeffrey Wright for American Fiction. And I will argue that after every single one of those performances that I watched, I felt very strongly that they were going to get into the best actor conversation. I thought they all were terrific.
Yeah. You know who I don't think should have been nominated?
Who, Jake? Tell us.
Go back on all the Real Blend episodes. You can figure it out.
Bradley Cooper is terrific in Maestro. He's terrific. He gives an outstanding performance. You talk about somebody who has to toe a line back and forth between his closeted sexuality and the relationship that he has with his wife.
Yeah.
I think to carry the arc of his career from the earliest time when you see him, when he gets that surprise, you know, call to come and conduct, to the way that he carries the weight of that fame all the way through.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that we had a conversation about the prosthetics in Maestro at the beginning of before anyone really even got a chance to see the film, I thought kind of handicapped that picture. because I don't think the prosthetics are bad, and I don't think that they do anything to really distract. They didn't distract me from his performance at all. His voice, the vocal intonations that he takes on to do it, him and I watched a clip of Carey Mulligan's character, an actual clip of the person,
Felicia,
and was stunned at how much she sounds exactly like her. I mean,
yeah.
Jake is sleeping on Maestro, and that also will be the case. I will sleep on Killers of the Flower Moon forever. Jake is sleeping on Maestro forever. That's fine.
I think one of the most underappreciated moments in cinema this past year is the REM joke in Maestro.
And it's really funny.
I don't know how they landed that in that tone. It was perfect. I want to pose a question to you guys because I think it's interesting to think about like that particular race in terms of like best actor, because there's so many amazing performances. And going back to the point we were making earlier, and then we'll go to a break here shortly, is the narrative surrounding the nominations up to the voting and when it happens. Does the front runner become two front runner and they don't want to vote for that person because they become the front runner? So the Giamatti story is interesting since we're talking about best actor. He's become, I would argue, and I'll use this term, a social media favorite. And I say that because after he won his Golden Globe, what's weird about the business that we're in is you have to take in every factor that would go into the voting, not just the performance. This goes back to the question about when someone's deserving or not deserving. Giamatti went to In-N-Out Burger after his Golden Globe win, and he's sitting at In-N-Out Burger with the Golden Globe on the table. That goes viral.
Legend.
I believe when that something like that goes viral, that does start to impact voters' minds. And I'm not saying he's going to win the Oscar because he ate a double-double with cheese or whatever he had at In-N-Out. But I do think that's a factor. Jake says this all the time. Good speeches can lead you to win the Oscar. And when he got on stage for Critics' Choice and when he got on stage for Golden Globes, he's become that speech giver that everyone's loving to see up there. They all love Paul Giamatti. Holdovers is a movie that I don't think anybody dislikes. It's a common film that we're all just kind of comforted by. And so this now goes into the narrative of the question of Killian versus Paul Giamatti. And my question to you guys is whether or not you think Giamatti ends up winning this because of the social media grace that he's been getting and the speeches he's giving. And do they just knock Killian out because, oh, they'll give it to Best Picture anyways? Like, how much thought process do you think goes into things like that? I think it's a lot.
I don't put that much stock into the impact that social media has on, because if that were the case, you know, I think Greta Gerwig would have gotten a Best Director. I think Celine Song would have been in for Best Director. I think we'd be talking a lot more about past live nominations. People are obsessed with Anatomy of a Fall and Zone of Interest, and they both did well today. But I mean, those are the movies that I see talked a lot about on social media. So I really don't think a majority of the Academy members are online. And yes, the In-N-Out thing goes viral, and that's I think Academy voters are much more likely to see that like on their local news than they are online. Yeah. But like,
sure.
You know, I think there's...
Do you think that affects it though? Do you think like an Oscar voter's at home watching KTLA in LA and they see this hilarious photo of Giamatti and they go,
I think it's more timing. I think by the time Oscar voting comes out, I gotta be honest, I forgot about the In-N-Out thing till you brought it up. I think by the time it's time to actually vote for these things, we'll be on to the next thing.
I'm not saying that's the deciding factor. I just think little things that lead up. I think he's become a favorite because of his personality, because of what he's doing in his speeches.
Hold on, right now, today, Jake, who wins Best Actor?
Giamatti.
Kevin?
Why?
No, who wins Best Actor today?
Giamatti, because of what I'm saying.
I think it's Giamatti, too.
Yeah.
All right, let's throw it to a quick break. And we'll wrap it up on the other side.
Grace with the people right now. He just does. Killian's kind of an introverted dude, and I think he's just not going out there and playing the game that Giamatti is. And we talk about this game all the time. Jake, you know what
he hasn't. I don't think he's won anything yet. I don't think Killian's won anything yet. So
let's throw it to a break. Critics groups.
And we'll wrap it up on the other side. And we are back. Okay, so today's big topic has been the Oscar nominations. I want to call out really quickly. Martin Scorsese has now become the most nominated living director. Incredible, incredible achievement for Scorsese. and joining him.
Who was it before him?
I think it was Spielberg. I think he just not moved out Spielberg.
Because Spielberg got a nomination today.
For producer.
For producing Maestro, but he's still nominated.
Oh, for producing Maestro? Yeah. Interesting.
Okay, but let me ask you this. I read an interview, and I can't remember who it was, but Scorsese made a comment about, when you think about the amount of times Scorsese has been nominated and lost, literally for every film since other than The Departed. I think he made a comment that, like, at a certain point in his career, he just had to accept that maybe, like, the Oscars weren't for him, that maybe he wasn't. I mean, and I understand his argument, but now it's hard to say, like, dude, you're the most nominated filmmaker of all time. Like, I mean, granted, he's only won one, but, like, where do we stand on the Oscars and Scorsese? Do they love to nominate him and not give it to him?
You know, there is a definite East Coast, West Coast bias.
Sure.
Because Scorsese has never really done a movie about the... I think he has done a movie about the movies.
The Aviator, kind
of. Hugo.
The Aviator, kind of. Hugo. Hugo, I guess, kind of.
Hugo is about movies, yeah.
For some reason, I fall into a category of, like, that there are directors that are very California-based. I guess I would put Spielberg in that conversation.
Sure. Well, he was
Altman
Arizona.
Kind of falls like one of those guys. And so they're glad-handing. They're at the same parties. They're all kind of running in the same groups. Well, Lucas would be that guy. And Scorsese felt like he was like the outcast, you know, who never really left New York and made his movies. And they get recognized because he's so gifted, you know, that how do you not acknowledge the work that he's doing? I guess in response to my take on Scorsese and the Academy, the one thing I'm most proud of him for, as if he gives a shit, is he's never made an Oscar movie. You know, I've never circled a movie that he's put out and said like, oh, he's doing this for Oscar attention. Yeah. I think they're all driven by stuff that interests him at the time.
Yeah.
And even if you want to make the argument if you want to make the argument that like The Irishman, you know, felt like it didn't feel like an Oscar picture to me.
No.
You know, it was still just him exploring the really interesting themes that were for him at the time.
It's also very interesting to point out how much the quote unquote Oscar movie has changed, right? If you like what is an Oscar movie? And I think we've had discussion before on the show about there's different genres like comedies and horrors and why those genres are kind of not as accepted in the best picture, or why is
Green
it not
Book
cinematic?
Is an Oscar movie. Green Book still strikes me as an Oscar movie.
But I will argue, and I hope this trend continues, that we are opening up a bit about what an Oscar movie is. Everything Everywhere All at Once is... Yeah. I don't know that fits into a quote-unquote Oscar type of category. That movie is insane, unique, amazing. Coda was just a heartfelt film that just worked. I don't know that felt like an Oscar film. You know, even going back to Return of the King and things like that, the Oscars have been able to step out a little bit.
Well, I don't think Poor Things is an Oscar movie, to be honest.
God,
with
no.
You.
Right. And what's funny about that, though, is
Yorgos 11 nominations.
But he's become an Oscar favorite. No pun intended.
Yeah.
Like when Yorgos puts a movie out, it's probably going to get nominated for a bunch of awards. And I think he's become one of those it filmmakers. Poor Things would be a wild Best Picture winner because that movie is so out there and so unique in its interest. I just love this. That going back to Jake's point about the 10 categories, I do like the 10 because it does give the ability to have so much genre changing elements within this. Like the Zone of Interest couldn't be more different than Barbie, and Anatomy of a Fall couldn't be more different than, you know, American Fiction. So I think it's cool to see. And while they might not all win, I do hope that we can get away from the concept of this is an Oscar movie. But you're right. I mean, like, people want to consider Maestro an Oscar film. And I do think that's a little belittling. But I want to believe he didn't make it to win an Oscar. He made it because he actually felt that he wanted
he made
to tell
the
story.
Martin Scorsese and Steven Spielberg told him to make that movie. That's essentially why he made that film.
I just think, but to say that Cooper made that film to win an Oscar, I think is belittling to the concept of him as an artist and the stories he's trying to tell. Like, at the end of the day, Maestro may quote unquote fit into an Oscar category. It's the 4-3 ratio, 1-3-3 ratio, whatever, black and white, etc. But I choose to believe and do fully believe that Cooper is just a storyteller who wanted to tell this story. And it just happens to be a film that could be nominated for an Oscar. I don't really believe he sits around and thinks to himself, I'm making an Oscar movie right
now. I'm mostly being cheeky, but I would point out that the last movie he made that had a bunch of Oscar nominations was the fourth iteration of an Oscar movie. A Star is Born might be the most nominated story of all time.
Sure. I mean, you're not wrong. I just... Maybe it's just my not, or what's the way Alden said, my naivety.
I think, of course, you have to be passionate about a story to tell it. It can't just be
sure
about that one thing. But I think
I would like to point out that as of today, let's assume that he doesn't win anything in a couple of weeks. He will be 0-for-12 at the Academy Awards. And you can't tell me a man who's 0-for-12 ain't thinking about winning an Oscar.
I also think it's okay if he wants to win an Oscar. Like, I tell you, I don't think it needs to belittle the work. I think he can be passionate about the work, but also go, I think this people are going to appreciate this. Like, every actor, no matter what they are, they grow up thinking about holding that statue when they're a kid. You know, like, it's fine.
All right, let me really quickly just get into an egregious snub that bothered me the most, and that's Daniel Pemberton, whose score for Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, I think, truly deserved to be recognized. I think some of the stuff he did on that soundtrack is revolutionary. I will recommend that you guys go back through and find our interview with him where he can break down some of his process. Jake, real quick, defend your boy, because I think John Williams took his spot. And John Williams indie film.
I can't necessarily defend a nomination for Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. I gotta be honest, I couldn't particularly defend a nomination for The Fabelmans, which I believe was literally only like 18 minutes of new music. I think he's sort of the Meryl Streep of composers, where if he works, he gets a nomination. But the thing is, too, is that, like, I mean, it's not like they give him wins. You know, he's 54 nominations, but I think only has 5 Oscar wins. So the ratio ain't great. You know, it'd be one thing if they gave him a win, if they threw him a win every, but I think it's been like 3 decades since he won an Oscar. I want to say Schindler's List might be the last one he won an Oscar for. And so it's just sort of like, you know, even he sort of had probably at this point, I mean, the dude is, you know, my maestro has achieved an incredible age of 90 plus. And, you know, even he's probably going,
Cut to Jake's interview when he sits down with John Williams and says, hey, dude, how you doing?
Dude, Johnny.
What's up, bro?
Johnny.
What's up, bro?
He's walked back his comments about retiring also.
Yes, he has. He's now said that if the right movie were to come along, which sometimes I feel like that, you know, in the same way, like, we were talking
another
about.
Another Indiana Jones movie. You know.
I mean, at that point, you kind of give credit of, like, Harrison's on board, you know. It's you want to get the band back together.
John Williams can do whatever the hell John Williams.
John Williams, yes.
No complaints on my end.
The Pemberton thing is crazy to me, and I know the Academy is not listening to Real Blend 24/7, but
I have on good authority that they are.
Anybody who listens to the Pemberton interview that we did and hears what this guy did to make the music that you're hearing in Across the Spider-Verse, and the fact that he wasn't nominated is insane. And I'm not saying the other composers, you know, didn't go through a rigorous process as well, but there's something about the way Pemberton spoke about finding sounds and atmosphere in his music that really, really, to me, like, if you're considering the best score, if you're considering it as a competition, a best, like, what's the best score? You know, obviously, I think Ludwig will end up winning, and it's a great score. 100% deserves it. But Pemberton not being nominated is absolutely absurd. It's embarrassing, actually.
There is one saving grace, which is that Beyond still has time.
True.
Sure. So I think that that could be the sort of thing that guarantees him a nomination, where they go, that was a miss. And, you know, this is the last one with Beyond, like. To me, at least, that maybe at least ensures that he's going to be nominated.
Yeah,
I think we talked about A24 earlier in terms of their successful campaigning. I think the biggest winner, well, Universal gets a huge vote of confidence, but Netflix getting Naiad across the line.
Yeah,
they deserve some big credit for because Annette Bening and Jodie Foster both getting in there are
did you guys surprises. So did you guys see the tweet I sent you guys where it was the list of all the films that got zero nominations? And I was kind of shocked. I'm just going to read this real quick. Origin, Ferrari, Priscilla, Saltburn, The Killer, John Wick 4, Asteroid City, The Iron Claw, All of Us Strangers, Mario Bros, and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And like I was reading that list going, how did Mario and Turtles not get into animated?
You know, I felt the same way about Turtles, but admittedly, there's a lot of the animated category this year that I need to catch up on. I'm pretty sure it was just a really strong year for animation outside of the tentpole studios. Yeah. I think was really because I was reading people talking about the other films and I was like, whoa, this wasn't even on my radar. And people were super passionate with how good some of those films were.
But so, some of those other movies, Saltburn, Priscilla, Ferrari.
Saltburn surprised me because Saltburn seemed to hit right when it needed to. Like I felt like everyone was talking about Saltburn on TikTok. And again, just a reminder that, you know, that we discuss oftentimes the bubble that we live in, that just because everyone in your circle is talking about a movie doesn't mean that that's going to translate to any. I feel like that's the perfect example.
Including the Real Blend podcast. I mean, we just spent an hour talking about films that you're going to forget what we said by the next day.
But I'm going to forget what we said by tonight.
In the meantime, head to the comments and give us your biggest takeaway. Of course.
Can I say one thing? Yep. If you haven't seen Origin, please seek it out. It didn't get any nominations, and I think Ava DuVernay did a phenomenal job, and it's just a bummer that and Anjanou Ellis should be in that actress race, in my personal opinion. I just think that film is incredible. So that's all I wanted to say.
Give us your biggest takeaway in the comments down below from this year's nominee. Follow us online at Jake's Takes, at Kevin McCarthy TV, at Sean_O'Connell, at Gabe Kovach. And the show is at Real Blend. We'll have plenty more to say about these nominations and these movies. Thank you guys very much for keeping it here with us. Matthew Vaughn next week on Real Blend. Until then.
Add a stunts category.
Dune. Part 2.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.